Some of the laboratory tests that I do, when you look at a population of people in the United States, 30% of them have autoimmunity. So even if you think autoimmune cure, that doesn't relate to me, actually it might, because there's a 7 to 14 year period before you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease where there's things that are happening in your body that you can do something about. And 30% of us are making antibodies against our own tissues. And I was one of them. So that's what got me to write this book.
Hey, friends, welcome to The Good Life with Michelle Lamoureux, a show for women in midlife who want to live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. I'm your host, Michelle Lamoureux, a self-love coach and the author of Design a Life You Love. And together we're going to be doing just that. Each week I bring on world-class experts, best-selling authors, leading entrepreneurs, and also do solo casts with the intention of inviting you to get connected to what you really desire from your life. This show is produced with love every week. There's inspiration and actionable tips in every episode because I want to see women playing a starring role in their lives instead of living on the sidelines. Be sure to join the Good Life Community newsletter over at thegoodlifecoach.com for more inspiration and tips to live your best midlife. And make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast player. I'm so glad that you're here. Hey, friends, and welcome back to the show. Today, we are joined by a repeat guest, Dr. Sarah Zahl-Gottfried, who is the author of 4 New York Times bestselling books about hormones, nutrition, and health. Her latest book is called The Autoimmune Cure, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Dr. Sarah graduated from Harvard Medical School and MIT and completed her residency at UCSF. She is clinical assistant professor in the Department of Integrative Medicine and Nutritional Sciences at Thomas Jefferson University and the Director of Precision Medicine at the Marcus Institute of Integrative Health. This was a fascinating conversation, and I had so many aha moments, things that I never thought about before or knew anything about, and I know that it's going to be the same for many, if not most of you as well. So be sure to listen to the end and share this conversation with a friend. Knowledge is power, and I think that when we share these conversations, we're not just getting educated ourselves, but we're lifting our fellow sisters, friends, mothers, people we care about up along with us. And I think that's really critical, especially as it relates to our health and well-being. I'm also going to list in the show notes a link to the very first interview I did with Dr. Sarah, because it was also another fascinating conversation and one that if you enjoy this conversation, I know you're going to want to go back and listen to that one if you missed it. So on that note, let's get into the show. Here we go. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sarah. I'm so excited to have you back on.
Michelle, I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, you always bring the goddess energy. I think of you as like OG health, but like not original gangster, but original goddess. And
I'll take it.
Yes, you always bring the goddess energy. The first time I had the honor of interviewing you, like you came on the screen and I'm like, oh gosh, she radiates health. And when you're learning about health, you want to learn from somebody, I think, who walks their talk. And as you can see here, I have every book you've ever written. And I'm so honored that I got to read an advanced copy of The Autoimmune Cure, which we're obviously talking about today.
Well, thank you. I love our conversations. So, you know, I feel like as women, we lift each other up, we get better, we tend to befriend. We deal with toxic stress by talking to each other. And I feel that every time we have a conversation.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. And I also have to say, you're always on the cutting edge. So before the mics went on, I was telling you how I discovered you on a podcast 10 years ago, and you were talking about the hormone cure. So you probably seeing all over social media and a lot of the docs I've had on, the focus is on menopause and perimenopause. You were talking about this 10 years ago and no one was sort of paying attention, but so grateful to you. And so I just think it's interesting that you're focused on autoimmunity. So what this tells me is we're going to be hearing a lot about this, but you're leading the charge.
We are going to be hearing a lot about it. You know, some of the laboratory tests that I do, when you look at a population of people in the United States, 30% of them have autoimmunity. So even if you think autoimmune cure, that doesn't relate to me, actually it might, because there's a 7 to 14 year period before you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease where there's things that are happening in your body that you can do something about. And 30% of us are making antibodies against our own tissues. And I was one of them. So that's what got me to write this book.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why and why now. And it's interesting what you said about the 7 to 10 plus years of maybe it's building towards that. Because as I was reading your book, I was thinking about things like dementia and Alzheimer's and how they say that it's decades in the making before you start seeing the symptoms. So I think this is a really important conversation, because if there's things we can be doing to prevent that and get on a healing track or lessen what might be coming down the road, then I'm all for that. I'm all for prevention.
Well, prevention is important, but also we've got to be honest that a lot of people don't sign up for prevention.
Yes.
They wait until they've got, you know, a scary diagnosis. That's when they sort of get the wake-up call.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot about how do we help people understand what's happening under the hood.
Yes.
Way before they get a scary diagnosis, whether that's Hashimoto's thyroiditis or some other autoimmune disease like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis. And this is one of those places where conventional medicine utterly fails us, especially women, because 4 out of 5 people with autoimmune disease are women.
Okay. Well, I want to definitely dive into more of this and understand it a bit more. And absolutely, I agree. And I can say I'm a fan of prevention, but this summer had my left arm basically wasn't working. I couldn't open up a jar. It was in pain. I couldn't lift a bag for months. Went to the doctor. You know, they sort of dismiss you like you're overreacting because they can't feel the pain in your hand. I should be able to use my arm. You know, do an x-ray, it's like, oh, there's a little bit of inflammation, you're okay. And so, you know, it did resolve, but is that a precursor to something building? I don't know. And then it starts to feel better and then you just move on. So I can say I'm a fan of prevention. It doesn't mean I'm being preventative.
Well, that's, I so appreciate you sharing that story, because in conventional medicine, often you don't get an autoimmune screen. I don't know if anyone did anti-nuclear antibodies or rheumatoid factor or measuring levels of inflammation like your high sensitivity C-reactive protein or a CBC with a differential complete blood count where you can look at the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio. So those things often aren't done by conventional medicine when you've got, you know, kind of loss of function of your arm. And yet it should be. You know, it's the kind of testing that I do on all of my clients. So I would say we've got to rebrand prevention. We want to take people along with us and say, this is more about how regulated are you? What's going on with your level of inflammation, such as what was happening in your arm? Is there something upstream with your immune system, with your psychology, with your hormones, with your neurological system, that could be leading to kind of these vague symptoms and loss of function in your arm? So that's the question that I want people to consider. And then, Michelle, you and I have to rebrand prevention.
Okay, let's do it. Starting today with this conversation. But so I want to ask another question, but first, just since you mentioned all those tests, could a regular doctor do, what was the ANA, what is that for again?
So anti-nuclear antibody is a simple blood test that doctors do all the time, especially if it looks like you might have an autoimmune disease. And, you know, this group that I mentioned where we're seeing 30% of people have anti-nuclear antibody, it's Function Health. So Function Health is looking mostly at like 100,000 people that have signed up to get blood work twice a year. And these tests are really basic conventional medicine tests. So anti-nuclear antibody, looking at inflammatory tone,
yes,
such as with the CBC with differential, the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio, the sedimentation rate, ESR, the high sensitivity C-reactive protein. These are really basic tests that any doctor can order.
Okay. But they may not.
But they may not. So you have to ask.
That's the thing.
They're still not willing. If you don't have that kind of collaborative relationship where you're together trying to create the best possible health, then you might need to get a new clinician.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's not exclusive to functional medicine docs or integrative health docs. It's more of whether the doctor could order this. I've had C-reactive protein tested, I forget, a few years ago. And I think CBC differential, I think they'll do, but I've never even heard of the ANA one. And I think that's one that what comes back positive or negative?
Comes back positive or negative. It can come back a little bit positive. In my case, it was really high level. And so, you know, functional medicine doctors do order these tests routinely.
Okay.
And I do an autoimmune panel on every single client that I take care of. But a lot of them are, you know, there's kind of a basic blood panel that I talk about in the book,
yes,
the autoimmune cure, that everyone can get with their conventional doctor. And then there's more advanced testing. There's, you know, stool testing. There's, I think everyone should be screened also for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, because about 13% of the population has it. And I especially think people after they've had a kid should be tested for that. So some of this stuff is a little bit radical, but I want to build bridges with conventional medical doctors, kind of take them with us in this journey of exploration. When you've got a conventional doctor who's faced their own health scare, often they're more open to doing more testing and learning more about this.
Absolutely. I actually had an eye doctor on who is conventionally trained, but she said she's one of two doctors that have certification in functional medicine.
That's
in the
amazing.
Country.
I know. Well, we're making progress. It's so exciting.
Making progress. But you're conventionally trained. I mean, you went to Harvard and MIT. And so what took you, I mean, because all your books have more of an integrative approach and look at things holistically. And even in your bio, it says you're more likely to prescribe a continuous glucose monitor and nutrition than the latest pharmaceutical. So.
Yeah, I became more integrative because I couldn't find the answers to my problems in conventional medicine. So, you know, this is not an uncommon story, but when I was in my 30s, I had one kid. I was working in McMedicine. I was seeing 30 to 40 patients a day,
wow,
burning the candles at both ends. And I really was struggling with weight loss resistance. I couldn't lose the baby fat. I felt stressed all the time. You know, I would do meditation and yoga in the morning and it just wasn't enough. It would kind of help me for like an hour or two and then the effects would fade. And so I went to my doctor with my list of PMS, low libido, trouble with weight loss. And I still remember just kind of the shock of what he said to me. He told me, well, why don't you go on a birth control pill? Because it sounds like you're hormonal, you know, almost like a accusation.
Yes. It's
How
your
about
fault.
Like it's my fault. And the only solution is to go on synthetic hormones. And then he suggested a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor for my stress. And then he suggested that I exercise more and eat less. So at first I just was kind of flushed with shame as he said these things to me. He's like, Sarah, I know you know the math. It's really simple. Mm-hmm. You just need to exercise more and eat less. Like he wasn't asking me how much I was eating or how much I was exercising. I was running 4 miles four times a week. I was eating what I thought was healthy food and I was restricting at the time. So what he said was wrong.
Yes.
I left his office. I went to the lab. And that's what really got me to say, okay, if I'm a medical doctor and I'm being failed by the conventional medical system, there must be millions of women who are also being failed. So that's what really got me started with looking first at hormones and then looking more broadly at the stress response and how women are so much more sensitive to stress than men are.
Yes. And that led to the autoimmune, the hormone cure, and then where we are today with the autoimmune cure. So let's define autoimmunity so that everyone has an understanding of what it is.
The immune system can be somewhat complex. I'm going to try to simplify it.
Yes.
I see it as a continuum. So on one side is totally healthy. A healthy immune system, you get exposed to a virus or a bacteria, you fight it off. Your immune system knows what is a foreign invader and what is your normal healthy tissue.
Yes.
On the other extreme is autoimmune disease. And that's where your protective army of your immune system is attacking your own tissues. So for instance, in type 1 diabetes, they're attacking your pancreas. In rheumatoid arthritis, they're attacking your joints. In Hashimoto's thyroiditis, your immune system is attacking your thyroid. But then there's this vast middle ground.
Yeah.
It's not like an on-off button. So there's this middle ground where for 7 to 14 years, you might start the civil war in your immune system, where your immune system starts to get confused and starts to attack your own healthy tissues. So that's what autoimmunity is. It's that period of time before you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And what we know is that for people who have an autoimmune disease, often they see 4 to 6 doctors. They wait years, sometimes 7 years, before they get a correct diagnosis.
Yes.
So that period of autoimmunity is what I especially want to focus on.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, what you were talking about with the way you were treated as a physician by another physician and to be shamed and talked down to, like, you know, this, you know, why are you here? Was almost the insinuation. You know, somebody who doesn't have the data is going in there and being spoken to like that and maybe just following along and thinking, well, it must be me because I'm listening to the doctor and he or she must know better. So it becomes a huge problem where maybe that's part of the reason. And then there's, you know, like my doctor's like, go see a occupational therapist for your hand. And then I had some paresthesia and then getting an MRI and they're like, you have chronic mild sinusitis. Didn't tell me to go see anyone for that. After reading your book, I'm like, maybe I should be just finding out if that, like, why do I have that? What does that even mean?
What's going on with your microbiome and your nose?
Yeah, there's some inflammation issue, right? Yes,
right.
Or gut. Okay.
Gut and, you know, how about a neti pot? How about we find ways to open the pathways? Because you get sinusitis when things aren't flowing properly through your sinuses. So, yeah.
I don't have symptoms. And I don't have symptoms. I didn't have symptoms for that. I was just having whatever that's called paresthesia, like the numbness and tingling. And so everything gets siloed, I guess, is to your point. But MS, like, are there certain autoimmune diseases now that are more common that we weren't hearing about or any sort of new awareness around that kind of stuff? Because you said there's a lot more than when you were in medical school.
That's right. So there were maybe a few dozen when I went through medical school. There's a lot of conditions that have been identified as autoimmune that we previously didn't think were. Things like Addison's disease, which is a problem with cortisol. And then there's also, so there's classical autoimmune diseases, and that's where you have what's known as an autoantibody. So your immune system, your B cells, they produce this weapon to fight your tissues that's called an antibody. And when your antibody is directed to your normal healthy tissue, like thyroid peroxidase or antithyroglobulin against your thyroid, we know that that is when you cross over into autoimmune disease. But there's lots of conditions where you're still attacking your own tissues, and it might be autoimmune-like, or it may be that we just haven't recognized the antibody yet. Things like long COVID, endometriosis, irritable bowel syndrome. So Mark Pimentel at Cedars has found some antibodies against normal tissue in irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia. So there's lots of different conditions that are associated with some of the triggers that we can get to that seem to kick off autoimmune conditions, and also to this immune system dysregulation that's especially common in women.
Okay. You mentioned something that I'd never heard about before, which is the connection between trauma as a trigger for autoimmune conditions. So how did you discover that connection, and tell us more about the significance of that? Because I know that's a big part of your book.
It's a big part of the book because I was taught years ago by Alessio Fasano, a pediatric gastroenterologist at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. You're from Boston, so I feel like you know Mass General.
Yes.
So Alessio Fasano talks about how you have to have a three-legged stool to cause autoimmune disease. And the three legs of the stool are genetic predisposition, together with increased intestinal permeability, so-called leaky gut. And then the third is a trigger. And the trigger is really important because for some people, it could be pregnancy and postpartum. For some people, it could be perimenopause. A lot of people think of perimenopause as mostly a hormonal thing.
Yeah.
You know, your immune system and your metabolic system is going through wild, dramatic changes.
Yes.
It could also be infection. And what we know from the literature and what I've seen in my own experience and in my practice is that a really common trigger is toxic stress or trauma.
Mm.
So the part that's exciting and hopeful about that is, yeah, you can't do much about your genetic predisposition.
Yeah.
But you can do something about the leaky gut and also the trigger and the reactivity to a trigger. So not all people with autoimmune disease have a history of trauma.
Yeah.
And not all people who get exposed to trauma develop autoimmune disease, but it's very highly correlated.
Yeah. It could be the trigger of the ones you were talking about, and trauma is a significant one. You talk about little T traumas and big T traumas. I think to have a human experience, you're experiencing some level of both at some point in your lifetime.
That's right. And it's, you know, in some ways it doesn't matter so much the details of the big T or little T trauma. What matters is the way that the trauma lives on in your body.
Yes.
The signature of that trauma.
Yes.
And, you know, what I discovered in my own body was that I had a significant amount of trauma that I was mostly ignoring. I was someone who was functionally dissociated. I just would go cognitive as a way of dealing with stress.
Yes.
That's a very common thing.
Yes.
Hyper-independent, super cognitive, and a little overly self-reliant, really common trauma patterns.
Yes.
And so as I saw this signature in my own body and the dysregulation associated with that, things like high cortisol, high stress hormones, I could meditate my way out of it, but then it would come back after a few hours.
Yes.
Low heart rate variability in my nervous system.
Is that one of the big triggers or indicators, I mean?
Huge.
Okay. You
know, one of the reasons I wear an aura ring, right? You've got yours on, is because I'm not the best historian. Like, I can't really tell you how stressed I feel.
Yes.
Because it's been kind of shocked out of me, and I'm not a complainer. And so I need data. I need metrics. I need my sleep tracking. I need my heart rate variability.
Yes.
My daytime stress that you get from an aura, and apparently Whoop also does that too.
Yeah.
So that tells you about your level of dysregulation.
Okay.
And then when you look upstream, often it's trauma or some way that you're dancing with stress that's causing that dysregulation. And it's not just internal. It's also in response to a toxic culture that we live in. In some ways, it's a normal response to the polarized, divisive, misogynistic culture that we live in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're both parents. And I think what you're talking about, like I said, this is just the beginning of what we're going to be understanding. I think I can see this, you know, this is going to be a huge, huge, like I said, you're always at the forefront of it. Nobody's really talking. I've not heard any, you know, I follow a lot of these talks. Nobody seems to be focusing as much as you are. But I, like I said, nobody's really mentioning the trauma piece. You did something called, you took your A score. Can you explain what that is? And what's the significance about having that trauma before you were 18? Like 18 and younger, what's the correlation there? Because I found that interesting, because we can have traumas later. And I'm just wondering how that also impacts autoimmunity or your predisposition to maybe having that get turned on.
Yeah, the interesting research from the 1990s that was done at the Centers for Disease Control in partnership with Kaiser Permanente in San Diego.
Okay.
Where they looked at Kaiser members, so mostly middle-class folks, yeah, pretty diverse population.
Yeah.
They found that when they asked a group of middle-aged people, so that's 40 to 65, when they asked them about their childhood adverse experiences or ACEs using a validated questionnaire that looked at sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, having a parent that went to jail or having a parent who had a substance use disorder, having a divorce in your family. So they tallied up the score. It was out of a total of 10, and 0 was normal. This is one of those tests you don't want to score high on. So my score is 6. I've got a pretty high score, and it's associated with more than 45 different chronic diseases, including autoimmune disease.
Wow.
So the significance was, in 1998, when this was first published, it was the first time that we saw that adverse childhood experiences would map to chronic health conditions in middle age, and not just what you might think of, like post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, mental health effects, but physical health effects. So that's the significance of adverse childhood experiences. And if our listeners today learn nothing else, I hope that you'll calculate your ACE score so we can, it's in the public domain. You can just Google it. You can also look up Sarah Gottfried ACE score and it'll pop up, and maybe we could put it in the show notes.
I will do that. Yeah.
So I think it's really important for people to know what their ACE score is.
Yes.
And on the other hand, there's also adult experiences that people can have that can, you know, kind of set you up for autoimmune disease or dysregulation of your stress response. And I used to think of the stress response, Michelle, mostly as kind of the way that your brain would perceive the environment, and your hypothalamus and pituitary would then talk to your adrenal glands and say, you know, release more cortisol. It's a stressful situation.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than that. So the way I think of it now is that what's vulnerable to toxic stress and trauma is your PINE network. And PINE stands for your psychology, your immune system, your neurological system, and your endocrine system. So cortisol is just part of that story. And we want to pay attention to the psyche, to your psychology. We especially want to pay attention to your immune system and how it can get dysregulated and lead to autoimmunity. We want to pay attention to the neurological system, and you can track that, track your vagal tone with heart rate variability or HRV, such as with a wearable.
Yeah.
And then there's your endocrine system. You can track your cortisol levels. You can track your insulin and glucose. They're hugely affected by trauma and toxic stress.
Mm. What I found interesting about the ACE score, so I went to the test, is that one of the things that wasn't included was any sort of childhood trauma that came on from like an illness, or like I wore a back brace for 6 years where I couldn't breathe for scoliosis, literally contained and could not breathe. I had a doctor tell me they don't use the particular brace she wore too, that we wore, because they said it causes psychological trauma, they learned. And so they don't use it anymore, but like that wasn't in there. And then I think of a parent managing their child who might have a health issue. I have a couple of friends whose kids were in and out of the hospital when they were little, both for the child and for the parent. That's such a significant trauma to navigate, but that wasn't on it. But you don't need it to be on there to know that you've been impacted, because you know you've been impacted, right? Is that fair to say?
That's right. So you were exposed to significant trauma as a kid. It's not measured by the ACE questionnaire, but it still can live on in your tissues.
Yeah.
The problem with these kind of inventories or questionnaires is that they're not perfect. You know, it doesn't look at bullying. It doesn't look at intergenerational trauma, which we know hugely affects your stress response. You know, the studies that have been done looking at women who are under a lot of stress, there's this thing called Project Ice Storm that happened in Canada around the same time as the ACE data being published, so 1998, where there was a severe cold snap and ice storm where people were isolated in their homes without heat, without power.
Oh, no.
And they looked at the women who were pregnant during this ice storm in Canada, and they found that there were two sets of genes that were altered and passed on to their offspring.
Wow.
That was their immune genes and their metabolic genes.
Wow.
So we know that intergenerational trauma, what I think of as soul wounds, can hugely affect your biology. And that's not picked up by the ACE questionnaire. So the ACE is kind of the best validated questionnaire that we have.
Yes.
But it's really just a starting point.
Okay. This is so good. And also, it's just so helpful to just think about autoimmune from a bigger picture perspective. Like you're saying, trauma, somatic experiences, what happened in your body, what's locked in your body, being on high alert all the time. You know, I can relate to that. I think because I couldn't breathe all the time.
Right.
And I just... It
leads to hyperarousal. It leads to, you know, we think of post-traumatic stress disorder as something that happens to Vietnam veterans and other people who've served in the military. But as I started to look at this, I saw trauma everywhere. And it wasn't something that I learned enough about in my medical training. I got about as much trauma education as I did nutrition education.
Yeah.
But when you start to look at it, you see it everywhere.
Yes.
And you know, you may not have post-traumatic stress disorder with the nightmares and the flashbacks and all of that, but maybe you've got hypervigilance.
Yes, I've worked on that. I used to too. Yes, I've had to work on that. Yes.
It's a
Absolutely.
Big project.
What's that?
It's a big project to solve.
That's
that.
A big project. That 100%, and just having the awareness and then trying to work through that. Can you just tell us a little bit more about HRV? We talked about it the first time you were on too, but I didn't know it went beyond 100, and I saw you work with professional athletes, and I saw, I think it was Steve Bartlett who hosts Diarrhea CEO, and he was working out and his was at like 150 or something. And I was like, oh no, it goes over 100. I thought this is based on 100, and I don't think I've gotten higher than like 45 ever. So I didn't even know it went that high. Can you tell us more about it and the significance? Yeah.
I think Steve is much younger than us.
He is. You think he's like 30. Something early 30s. Yeah. Yes, true. And no kids and no childbirth. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know him personally, but yes, my professional athletes, I take care of mostly pro athletes and executives and people who struggle with autoimmune disease. And what I can tell you with my professional athletes is that their scores are more than double mine. So, you know, they often are rookies. Some rookies are like barely out of college. So they're typically like 20 to, I think LeBron is 38 now. So their HRV is quite a bit higher because of the way that they exercise and move and, you know, really take care of nourishing themselves.
Yes.
But the rest of us, it's not so much that we want to compare ourselves to an NBA player.
Yes.
We want to look at, for our own level of heart rate variability, what helps us improve it? What helps it? You know, I do N of one experiments all the time. And I can tell you, if I have a shot of tequila, my HRV is half what it normally is. So I know what brings it down.
Yes.
Every time I fly to Asia, every time I fly to New York, it goes down by half.
Okay.
When I am on my game, when I'm getting exercise, I'm moving and I'm meditating and taking good care of myself, when I'm taking magnesium before I go to bed, all of those things lead to an HRV that's in the 50s. And that's pretty good for me because I'm in my 50s. And, you know, I imagine if I was tracking my HRV in my 20s and 30s, it was much higher.
Okay.
But mostly you just want to compare yourself to yourself over time and do these little experiments to see what can be helpful. And, you know, I have to also say a big part of this new book is some of the novel treatments, the healing states of consciousness, such as with breath work and also with psychedelic medicine. And my HRV goes up by about 30 to 100% when I go through a psychedelic assisted therapy treatment. Wow. So we think of psychedelics mostly as dealing with trauma and treatment resistant depression, maybe disordered eating, anxiety. They also can serve as a modulator for the PINE network. They can modulate your immune system. They can help you increase vagal tone. They can help with your endocrine issues. So we want to think about the physical effects of psychedelic medicine too.
Okay. Again, you're on the cutting edge of this. I've heard different people like Tim Ferriss. There's certain people out there who've been talking about it more, and I've heard a little bit about it, but I honestly don't know much about it. And I would imagine there's many women listening today that don't either. I would love to be educated. I'd love to educate them because it, from what I read in your book, and then I watched you on another interview, she said something about, you know, kind of associating with being like a good girl and, you know, don't do drugs. I could relate to that. You mentioned, you know, obviously you were in studying, you were out doing drugs. So I think there's a misconception about drug use in general that, you know, it's only bad. So help educate us and bring us up to speed and what those psychedelics are, because I'm really curious about it. And I think there'd be a part of me that would be open to trying it, but a bigger part of me that would be terrified of doing it.
In some ways, I would say psychedelic medicine needs to be rebranded because, you know, I was, when ecstasy was really popular and people were going to raves like in the 1980s, the 1990s, I was in the library. So I'm one of those people who is totally square. I didn't smoke pot in high school or college. I never took magic mushrooms.
Damn.
And what happened for me was that I had two events that were side by side that got me to change my mind.
Okay.
The first was that I had a falling out with a family member. And I feel like the conflict that we had was related to childhood trauma on my side.
Hmm.
So a way that I get super defensive and self-reliant and reactive. So that happened and it was heartbreaking. So we were estranged for about a year. And I felt like, I imagine trauma is driving my behavior.
Yeah.
So at the same time, there were studies being published and kind of this renaissance, this way of thinking about psychedelic medicine and its therapeutic benefits. So not recreational use, which I had disdained in the past, but therapeutic use, ceremonial use.
Mm.
And so one organization in particular, MAPS, was looking at MDMA as a way of helping people with trauma, with post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And now we expect that MDMA is going to get FDA approved for the treatment of trauma.
Wow.
So as these studies were being published, I couldn't help but pay attention.
Yeah.
And what they were showing was that if you're someone with trauma, if you're someone with, I've got partial PTSD, and that's what I see in a lot of my practice, not kind of the classic PTSD, but partial.
Yes.
What we know is that the standard of care when you've got PTSD or partial PTSD is usually talk therapy, sometimes trauma-informed, but not always.
Yes.
And then often a pharmaceutical, like a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. There's three that are FDA approved for PTSD. And how effective are they as the gold standard for trauma? 30% effectiveness. It's pretty low.
Yeah.
So the part of the brain that uses words and kind of understands what happened to you.
Yes.
Kind of hashes it and rehashes it with a therapist.
Yes.
A different part of the brain than the part that understands kind of bottom up the experience of that trauma and kind of the signature of that trauma. So there are two different parts of the brain. And unless you're having this more somatic experience,
yes,
you may not be healing that trauma signature in your nervous system.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this data on MDMA-assisted therapy, and they're showing that with 2 to 3 treatments, that 2/3 to 71% of people no longer meet criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder.
That's incredible.
Incredible. So more than double as effective. So even though I'm a total square and I've always been a good girl and never took drugs, I'm now in my 50s and I'm like, if there's some way that I could resolve this trauma and heal my side of the street with this family member, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. So I've been doing once a quarter MDMA assisted therapy with a psychologist and a few others. And it's made all the difference in resolving trauma. It's helped me with the dysregulation that I used to live with. It helped me see this dissociation that I had. And, you know, when you're in medicine, dissociation is really lauded. You know, if you can kind of go upstairs and forget about needing to go to the bathroom or needing to eat or needing to sleep, and you could just like be a machine taking care of people.
Yeah.
You know, it serves you well.
Yeah.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah.
So that's what got me interested and kind of opened my heart to the possibility that there are ways that we can resolve trauma that are much better than the gold standard. And, you know, I also grew up with hearing scary stories of people taking LSD or people taking mushrooms and having scary things happen. These medicines that we're talking about, these sacred medicines,
yes,
are safer than alcohol. They're safer. David Nutt has this beautiful quote where he says that psychedelic medicine is safer than riding a horse.
Wow.
So when you think about it that way,
yes,
it just kind of opens the possibility that maybe you could resolve the trauma that you've experienced. Maybe you can resolve that signature of trauma and the dysregulation that could be driving you toward autoimmune disease, could be fueling your Hashimoto's, could be leading to an attack of the myelin and multiple sclerosis, could help you with your cortisol problems, might be able to help you with your heart rate variability.
Wow. Can you tell us what actually happens though? Because I think that's where the curiosity lies, right? So I remember in college finishing finals and then I saw 80% of my friends sitting around a tree doing mushrooms. And I was like, oh, that's not for me. I've never done drugs. And I was like, well, I'll go find a friend who's not shrooming right now. But I remember one of them coming in and was like, oh, I need to get back outside and wanted to go out the window. And I stopped the person. And so like, that's my memory of it. So I don't know what they were experiencing. Everyone seems to be, they were seeing something because they weren't fully there, you know, but they were there, not there. So, but I also want to reflect on a word you use. You said sacred. Also, a lot of these things have been around forever and used within communities that knew how to respectfully and safely administer them and help somebody through this kind of a journey, it sounds like, too.
That's right. Yeah, in the more indigenous practices, you are taking these medicines in a ceremonial context. So you're not, you know, waiting for finals and then taking mushrooms. You might, you know, get out through a window. What's happening is usually that you're in a group, and there's a very careful container of safety. So I've done a velada with an indigenous healer from Mexico where we are seated in a circle and she does cleansing practices and then she prays over the mushrooms before you take them in the sacred context. And if you have to go to the bathroom, someone comes and walks with you. It's almost like you feel like a geriatric person And there's no, you know, like trying to go through the window. So there's a level of safety that's really critical.
Yes.
But most of the therapeutic contexts that I'm talking about, like with MDMA or with LSD or even with psilocybin, you know, we have to collect research on these things. And so in a research setting, typically you've got a therapist or someone who's administering the medication. Ketamine is also in this category, and that's legal. These others are not FDA approved yet. So you're in a context, a therapeutic context. There's a lot of attention to set and setting, your mindset, the environment for creating safety. You've got an intention, and mm-hmm. you've got a therapist or a guide who's with you. Sometimes it's more peer support. That's more underground, but increasingly above ground too. And the focus is really on your own innate healing capacity. Mm. How do we access that? So it's very different than working with a talk therapist who's mm-hmm. trying to help you make sense out of what happened to you. And, you know, it's giving you maybe some cognitive coaching and reframing. This is much more bottom up, you know, kind of going back through some memories that you have, maybe with the brace that you were forced to wear that limited your breathing, and really feeling the feelings of what it was like. Mm. But on the medicine, the fear is mostly extinguished. And so it allows you to feel that stress and that pain and the discomfort and the terror and the, you know, just the distress of what you went through, but to be able to process and complete it. Wow. That's what's different.
You're really completing it. Yes. This is what I'm hearing. And that's what I read in your book. And that's, it's hard to wrap your mind around that. Cause it, like you said, in like a talk therapy situation, I don't feel like you ever really complete it. You may be in a place where you're able to navigate it or stop the hypervigilance or whatever it is, but through awareness, but you're definitely not on a somatic level. It's not been touched.
That's right. I mean, I would say 30% of people do heal. So there are some people who heal. That was not my story. So I spent, I don't know how many thousands of dollars going to weekly talk therapy through my 20s and 30s. Like I initiated psychiatric care when I had depression during my residency at UCSF. And if I had been given informed consent, if they said, listen, you'll come to weekly therapy, you'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's got a 30% chance of working, I would have been like, forget it.
I'd rather find something else. Yeah, I'll go run. Yeah, I'll sign up for a marathon. Thanks.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. This is really, I think it's fascinating. And people can keep following you to learn more about that. I did want to ask you about you mentioned 4 out of 5 people with the autoimmune or the predisposition or whatever are women. And you also mentioned earlier and in your book about the hormonal changes that happen with pregnancy, perimenopause, menopause. What do we understand about, you know, what's going on there? And is that part of it? I mean, is it like you even wrote that women can respond more strongly to vaccines because of estrogen and progesterone? And I was like, well, this is really interesting because I think I'm one of those people. So can you just talk more about this? Because I didn't understand fully, like, I didn't realize that it makes sense to me that the hormonal shifts would impact our level of immunity and resilience. And
it's a critical part of the story because women are much more vulnerable. And as we try to understand why that is, we know that the hormonal shifts that we go through, like especially when you're pregnant, half of the genetic material in the embryo, in the fetus that you carry, is not yours. And so your immune system has to do some pretty subtle work to not reject that DNA that doesn't belong to you.
Wow. Never thought, like literally never would have thought of that. That's fascinating.
It's huge. And sometimes it backfires. And so when women deliver their baby and deliver their placenta, their hormones go from sky high down to nothing. And that's a preview of perimenopause, a preview of menopause. And so a lot of women in that situation, that's when they're autoimmune. condition starts to progress. It's a really common time for Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I think all women postpartum should be checked for antibodies against their thyroid because it's so common, especially if they've got symptoms of their thyroid not working, which are often confused with just, you know, having a new baby, tired and your hair falling out and you're
totally.
Yeah. And then in perimenopause and menopause, similar. So estrogen and progesterone are really designed as immunomodulators. So they help to keep the immune system in check. And then when they become disrupted, such as when you're postpartum or in perimenopause or menopause, it can lead to your immune system being dysregulated. And then the other thing that happens is that those are biological differences. The X chromosome is different than the Y chromosome, obviously, but especially in how it manages your immune system. So if you just think of the pandemic, we know that women did better in terms of mortality with COVID because our immune system is more reactive. So we respond more quickly to a vaccine. We mount a response with an infection with COVID. So we had mortality rates that were lower than what we saw in men. But that can backfire. It leads to a greater risk of autoimmune disease. It leads to a greater risk of vaccine reactions, especially women. You know, what I saw with vaccine reactions was my patients from 35 to 55 had the most vaccine reactions, the women. So another piece is not so much a biological or sex difference, but a gender socially constructed difference. And that is women experience more trauma. So we know from that original ACE study in San Diego that women on average have about 10% more adverse childhood experiences than men. And we've got a lot more sexual violence. We've got even in military situations where men and women are exposed to the same trauma, women have higher rates of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
So we've got more toxic stress, we've got more trauma, together with kind of these underpinnings, these hormonal underpinnings and the way hormones work as immunomodulators that make us more vulnerable to autoimmunity.
Wow. Yeah. When I read the list of all the things women go through, their risk of sexual violence and all of the stuff, like that page just, it just upset me so much. And I don't know, especially as a mom of a daughter too, I'm like, oh gosh, we're letting our girls out into this. And it makes sense to me. I know we're coming to the end of the time and we could cover so much, but people can buy the book, The Autoimmune Cure. It's called Healing the Trauma and Other Triggers That Have Turned Your Body Against You. But I think people like to know, you know, what they can do proactively. So we talked about psychedelics. We talked about asking your doctor for blood tests or going to see a functional medicine doctor. If you're a regular doctor, won't do that. What else do you want the women listening with to think about in terms of this? And also, potentially, is it potential to reverse or keep at bay? Because I think, you know, hope. Okay.
Yeah. So I take care of a lot of patients with autoimmune disease and with autoimmunity. And every day I've got patients who have been able to reverse this. So, you know, once you have a disease, we talk more about remission, but I have a lot of patients who are in remission from Crohn's disease, psoriasis, type 1 diabetes.
Even type 1 diabetes? I don't mean to interrupt you, but I was even surprised reading in your book that I didn't know you could get it in your 50s. You mentioned one of your patients who got it in her 50s. And I thought, oh, I thought it happened when you, like you would get it when you're
young. So a lot of people get it when they're in childhood. But yeah. So in this woman's case, it was about a year after she started menopause.
Oh.
She's still not on insulin. She's been able to use the protocols of the book to really manage her glucose. She wears the continuous glucose monitor and she's done many of the things that are in the book. So when we were talking about the solutions, I got a little bit out of order because I get very excited about psychedelic medicine and healing states of consciousness. What I typically have people start with once they've done the testing is food. So we know an elimination diet makes a big difference because what you eat can trigger the immune system because that tube that goes through the center part of your body, your gut, is the way that you're interacting with the outer world. And it can be just one cell layer thick between your immune system and the food that you're eating.
Yes.
So if you're eating food that you're reactive to, if you're eating gluten and dairy and nightshades and sometimes nuts and seeds, those can trigger these immune reactions and lead to leaky gut, you know, kind of loss of intestinal integrity.
Yes.
So food is really important. We know that a careful elimination provocation diet is critical. So I wrote about that. That's one of the chapters in the book. And then there's embodiment practices, especially for people who are more functionally dissociated like I used to be, so that I'm not hanging out up here all the time. I'm like coming downstairs on occasion most of the time. There's sleep, there's immunomodulators like vitamin D and curcumin. And then these healing states of consciousness. I don't want people to think, oh, this doctor said I have to start taking MDMA assisted therapy. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is find ways to create healing states of consciousness and create this level of embodiment. Because once you know those states in your body, yes, once you have a sense of what regulation feels like, there's no going back. There's no going back to the dysregulated state. So by whatever means possible, I practice yoga. I meditate every morning, sometimes twice a day, because that's what I need. You know, creating, I talk about holotropic breath work. And then I also think somatic treatments like Hakomi, like somatic experiencing, EMDR, neuroemotional technique, all of which are described in the book. These are also techniques that can be really effective.
I love it. And I know I need more on the somatic side. My body's been begging me for it and I just haven't made time. So I can say I'm a fan of preventative medicine, but if I'm not acting on it. So what do you want to make sure the women listening take away from this conversation, maybe even around the framing around how to approach it? Because I think a lot of women are like us, either they're in their heads or they're just so much on their plate and they're feeling the aches, they're feeling their arm not working like me, maybe, but it gets better. So they keep going. What's the wake up call or what's the message you want to leave them, the women listening with today?
Start with knowledge, start with testing. So I would say demand an autoimmune panel, the basic panel that's in the book. So we talked about what that is. Anti-nuclear antibodies. Look to see if you've got antibodies against your thyroid. Look at levels of inflammation like high sensitivity C-reactive protein. And then I really think we need to use wearables. So about 50% of Americans use wearables right now. We think within 5 to 7 years, it's going to be closer to 100%. So jump on that train. Start to get a sense of what kind of homeostasis, what kind of balance and regulation you have in your body, and track things like your heart rate variability, track your sleep. I think all of us should be getting about 2 hours of deep sleep every night. Track your resting heart rate. Notice what people you hang out with and what happens to some of these numbers. What happens when you have a tequila? And I mean, this starts to change everything because it's so much easier to become regulated than it is to live with the misery of being dysregulated, because dysregulation leads to divorce. It leads to conflict with your children. It leads to difficulty at work. It leads to not being able to be your full self and really serve the way that you're meant to. And so understanding that about yourself is really key. And then you want to find the ways that you become regulated and become the kind of person like you, who regulates others, who learns how to co-regulate, who learns how to co-regulate their children, learns how to co-regulate their colleagues and their partners. That's what the world really needs right now.
You are amazing. Doctor, we're going to just call you Dr. Goddess. That's the rebrand. The book is The Autoimmune Cure, Healing the Trauma and Other Triggers That Have Turned Your Body Against You. It's available for, I think when the interview comes out, it's going to be available everywhere. Where do I direct people, Dr. Sarah? And can people work with you?
It can work with me. So I've got some info on my website about that. And if you're on my email list, if you do the ACE questionnaire as an example, you'll get announcements about when I'm open to new patients. I'm mostly doing kind of a combination of precision medicine, functional medicine, and psychedelic medicine. So for people who are interested, you can be on my list and hear more about that. So my website is sarahgottfriedmd.com. And on social, I mostly hang out on Instagram. I'm told I'm supposed to also hang out on TikTok, and I need to. That's next in line. But
yeah,
my Instagram is at sarahgottfriedmd.
Okay. And all the show notes for today will be over at thegoodlifecoach.com. Share this with everyone you know, because we're all ultimately could be impacted, and better to get ahead of it and be, like you said, knowledge. Start with knowledge. Knowledge is power. So thank you for being here again today. You're always such a light. And I just want to thank you, because the first time you were on, I've had 300 interviews. And the level of presence you bring to an interview is incomparable. Like, you're so special. And like I said, you radiate vibrance and health, and everything you do, you walk your talk. And I just appreciate you. And I just want to say that, because I was so excited to have that first interview and nervous, to be honest, just because I've admired you. And I always thought if I had a podcast, I really would love it if Dr. Godfrey would come on. And then when I was sitting with you, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's even more amazing in person. Like, you are just so lovely and so present. And I love my guests, but truly, I have to just acknowledge you for that, because it stayed with me. So thank you. And I know you bring that to everyone. You talked about co-regulation. I know you bring that to your daughters and, you know, everyone that you're around, and I'm sure your patients and your friends. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Oh my gosh. Just feel the love from you, and sending it back to you, sister.
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking the time. And I look forward to sharing this interview with everyone listening today. So thank you. Hey friend, I have one request before we sign off today. If you've gained any value from any of the interviews that you've tuned into, would you take just 1 minute and leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts? It's actually how more women can find the show, and I want to continue growing a community of women who are loving themselves and living full on. So thank you for all of your support, and I look forward to being back with you next week. Bye for now.
This podcast is presented for entertainment and educational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to be a substitute for medical, mental health, or other professional advice. Seek out your trusted healthcare provider or other qualified professional for all matters dealing with your health and well-being. Any opinions or information provided by a guest are their own and not those of Michelle Lamoureux or the company.